Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today, Mr. Gracious. Mr. Humble at your service. Reporting for duty, as a presidential candidate might say. I'm excited about having Rick Maurer back on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Rick's an old friend of ours and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's one of the guys who helps people like me and you not only change, but manage change. And not only manage change, but use it to our advantage, to leverage change, to actually turn this thing that we used to hate into something that we can make into a productive tool. He's the author of Beyond the Wall of Resistance and one of my favorite books. I love this title, folks, and I go around saying it all the time. Nobody listens. And the title is Why Don't You Want What I Want? Rick Maurer, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Good to be back, Jim.
I love the title. I still love this book. It's been out, I don't know, a year or two, but I go around my office all the time saying, why don't you want what I want? And they say, whatever, boss, whatever. I get no respect around here, Rick.
God, the Rodney Dangerfield of radio.
That's right. That's me. No, yeah. That's me. Hey, it already is 2005.
Yes, it is.
We're here. It is here. And I can't believe where 2004 went. I blinked and it was gone.
Huh.
I fear that 2005 is going to be like maybe 85% of a blink. if we don't figure out a way to make sure that we maximize the time that we have.
That's true.
I want you to help us do that.
Okay. Well, I got thinking around New Year's, and each year I often sit down and I do resolutions, and I thought, I come up with this incredibly long list of stuff that looks great. You think, boy, if I do those, there'll be a cure for the common cold,
right.
And I'll run the 3.5-minute mile.
Will be the path to your door.
Exactly. And then about the end of January, I start to get depressed. It's like all these people who make a resolution to get in shape, and you can't get into an exercise club the month of January.
Right.
And then February, it's the machines are yours. And
I knew one guy who actually kept his resolutions.
Is that right?
He's the same guy that told the teacher she hadn't given us the homework yet.
He didn't live long, did
nobody,
he?
Well, he lived a long time. Nobody liked him. He had no friends.
Well, but I got to thinking, I think maybe a better approach is to not put all, 10, 20 resolutions on our plate, but to say, what do I want to pay attention to? So, for instance, since, my work has changed, like or focused on change, like the why don't you want what I want, to just sit back and say, huh, those times when I have been successful, when the people around me at work have gone, hey, that's a good idea, or people start volunteering to do things, what did I do? What was different about those times? And just start paying attention to one, what I've done well in the past, but also pay attention to what I'm doing today without trying to make big changes. My belief is if we actually pay attention to those things, we start to go, oh, that doesn't work. Oh, that works. And we have a way of beginning to self-correct.
And you're talking about noticing the little things too, aren't you?
Well, not only two. I'm talking about noticing the little things.
Primarily. Well, you've heard me say that when I was learning how to fly instruments in an airplane, my instructor said instrument flying is the definition of instrument flying is making lots of little bitty corrections.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great analogy, Jim. And that's exactly what it is.
Because what he said, Rick, was that when you wait too long to make a little correction, then it only takes a couple of seconds for you to have to make a large correction. And then what you're trying to do is get back onto a point in the air where you're stable. And in order to get to that point, you have to overcorrect, which means that you're more likely to swoosh through that line and go over to the other side like a pendulum. And before long, you're rocking back and forth, mm-hmm. And before long, you're out of control.
Yeah. Boy, that's,
and it's the same way in business, isn't it?
It's, well, it is. I'm really even more struck by that analogy, because that's exactly what happens when people try to introduce an idea. They get this grand plan, like we're going to fly from New York to L.A., and they don't pay attention to the instruments along the way.
Right.
And by the time they've hit the Midwest, I mean, they're just all over the place, and they have no chance of getting across the country.
Right.
Yeah, and it is, and it's those tiny things, like how am I going to introduce that thing in a meeting? Mm-hmm. How do I react when Joe goes ballistic like he does every time I bring up an idea?
Well, and see, here's the thing, and I want you to talk about this on the other side, because you're the best at this. You and I, as the boss of our organization, as so to speak, as the manager, the owners of our organization, we get that. But when we talk about those little corrections to our people, sometimes they think we're being nitpicky. And so when we come back, I want you to help us get rid of that reputation. 20 till. We'll be right back with our good friend Rick Maurer. He's the author of Beyond the Wall of Resistance. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and somebody else who's got it is our good friend Rick Maurer. He's the author of Why Don't You Want What I Want? He is our Brain Trust member's change agent. He's the guy who helps us understand about change. And Rick, we were talking about making tiny corrections.
Yeah.
And have you noticed that? Have you noticed that, you know, you and I are watching these things. We got what I call a calibrated eye. You know, our eye has very fine calibrations. And so we see something a little out of kilter, and we immediately want to pounce on it. But our people, they're not quite as nuanced as we are. You know, it's not that they're, you know, they're probably smarter than we are. It's just that they're not quite as critical of little adjustments. And so if we make those a comment about a little tiny thing, it makes us look like we're being picky, doesn't it?
It does. But you know, I take exception, actually, with they're not as nuanced. It's often I'm more nuanced with my brilliant idea, the thing that I came up with, whereas they may be far more nuanced than the thing they're working on, because I don't know it as well.
So we got to make it their idea.
We got to make it their idea, and also I think a good place to start is if I start paying attention to the little things, the little self-corrections on the instrument dial, and I'm public about that and saying, wow, hey, we just diverted there by 2 degrees. I just want to let you know why. So I'm starting to think out loud. I'm starting to tell people why I'm doing it. It starts to give other people information about, oh, that's why we're paying attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what I find, because I do work in chemical plants, one of the places where I work.
That's where the glow comes from.
That's where it is. That's right. And they know that not only do they have to make money, but they got to do it safely, and they've got to pay attention to environmental concerns. And one of the big things that really helps them is that those people on the line, the maintenance people and the operators, get why those dials are critically important.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get why, then man, they're there. I mean, they are far more attentive to nuance than the management team.
Well, and we have to turn those dials over to them. They have to become their dials, don't they?
Yes. Yes.
Because if they're managing our dials, that's when their nuances don't pick up like they do when it belongs to them.
Yeah, I mean, people get passive, like, oh yeah, well, you know, Jim will tell me what to do.
Right.
Yeah, they just, you know, I mean, they used to say in the auto industry that we're hiring you from the neck down.
Yeah.
I mean, those were the old days, fortunately. But, man, as soon as somebody believes that that's all you want out of them is their brute force or their ability to enter something into a computer, man, you've lost most of what's valuable.
I heard something the other day that I've been wanting to say on the air for a long time, and you just given me the opportunity. I heard Brett Favre being interviewed the other day about playing football.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, most of you know he's a quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. And he said, he was talking about playing in a game, and he said, you know what, they play us to practice, they pay us to practice, he said, but we play the game for free.
Yeah.
And wasn't that a great way to say that? I mean, in other words, we have to be made to. If you can't play this game on Sunday for free, then you don't need to be here.
Yeah.
And I think he was talking about what you're talking about. We pay our employees to learn the things that we need them to learn to do their job. But if they won't actually take it in and do their assignment with their own sense of pride for free, then we probably haven't done the right job. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. I think there's something about kind of the engagement you see in sports folks, or you see it in people in the arts. You see musicians, and I mean, I play in a couple bands right now, and you know, some of the jobs we play, I'd play for free, you know, mm-hmm. just because that's where I want to be.
Right.
And, you know, and if you could make the workplace a place where people want to be, I hate to say nothing can stop you, but you are in such stronger shape than those companies where people go in, you know, you walk in and somebody looks at you and go, you want fries with that?
I mean, right.
There's nothing there. There's no life.
Well, see, and I've been in both places. I've been in those places where, as you say, it looks like a bunch of flatliners, and
yeah.
and you go in other places, and it's quitting time. You're there at quitting time, and you look over and you at the person. You say, "I'm sorry, it's time for you to lock up." And they say, "Don't worry about that. What do you need?"
Yeah, yeah.
And when you get a person who says that, who's an employee, they're playing in the game. They're not practicing.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's one of those small things to pay attention to that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of indicator, like, oh, gee, isn't that interesting?
Well, and here's a way to kind of see, without saying anything, without asking any questions, here's a way to see if your employees are like that. Do they always, without exception, leave at quitting time?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times, who can quit whatever they're doing on a half a minute's notice 220 days a year?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Somebody at some point in time has got to say, you know what, I got 5 more minutes, 10 more minutes, I'm going to finish this before I go.
Yeah.
That's one way to tell, I think.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, and also another thing you can pay attention to, because we're talking about paying attention to little things, is the pronouns. Do they talk about your ideas, your change, or do they talk about our ideas?
Well, of course, as you know, that begins with you and me.
You betcha.
You and I have to start that. And I want you to talk about that when we come back after these messages.
Okay.
It's 10 Till. We'll be right back with our good friend Rick Maurer. He's the author of Beyond the Wall of Resistance and Why Don't You Want What I Want? Stay with us. There's a man who never had to play for free, Mr. Mark Knopfler, on vocals and on guitar. Rick Maurer is our guest. Rick, I wish I could play like Mark.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
He's some kind of guitar player, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I used to have a band. You were talking about playing for free. I used to have a band like that would
is that
play
right?
for free. But
huh.
we did it because we weren't very good.
Ah.
Rick, give us your website, please.
Sure thing. It's www.beyondresistance.com.
All right. Tell us what we'll find when we get there.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of free articles and assessment tools and just information on how to lead change effectively. And when you go there, anything you see that you like, you can download it and use it
mm-hmm.
for free.
Well, thank you for that. And folks, I encourage you to get into this thing. I'd like to see people become a student of change. Rick,
yeah.
I think that's the only way to really survive and thrive in the 21st century.
I agree with you. In fact, my clients, the ones who I think are most successful, are students of change. I mean, they might be surprised to hear themselves called that, but they really are paying attention to those kind of things that help them build support for their ideas and see things through. And those who just think, I gave a command, people are going to do it, are the ones who keep fighting and fighting and fighting, and it's tough on them, it's tough on the people around them.
Well, you're creating casualty lists otherwise.
Yes, yeah, you're creating casualness, and your success rate of getting things implemented so you get some value from it goes way, way down.
Well, and you were talking about the pronouns a minute ago, about us and about me and we. We have to start that, it seems to me, as the owners, as the leaders of our organizations. We have to start that by using the proper pronouns. Instead of saying this belongs to me, they say this belongs to us, this project. And in fact, I think you shouldn't say we as much as you should say you guys, those guys, these people did this. Our people did this. These employees did this. These stakeholders, whatever, you know, put it over on them. I know you know what I'm going to say, folks. If you want to be outrageously successful, help your people be successful. Aggregate their success for your success.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the we part of it is we're coming up with the plans. Hey, how are we going to get over this hurdle? How are we going to meet this challenge? But in giving credit, when you can pass that credit on to the other people and do it sincerely. I mean, if it's a technique, because you just heard it on Jim Blassingame's show,
right,
that ain't going to work. People are going to catch that. But if they really believe that, you know, you really are giving credit to the other folks for doing it, that counts for a lot.
I heard a guy one time introducing his employees, and he said, "These are the people I work for."
Huh.
And the people, I could see in their eyes, they knew that he meant that.
Yeah.
But as you say, if you don't mean it, if you don't practice what you preach, if you don't put your money where your mouth is, so to speak, you know, they get that too, don't they?
Real quick.
But you can't manage change by yourself, and you've taught us that, Rick. You got to have help, don't you?
Well, you do. I mean, if it's a big change, I mean, I'm going to paint the office blue, maybe you can do that alone. But, you know, if you're shifting direction, you're introducing a new product, you want the sales team to do something differently, they've got to be in on it. They've got to be helping, one, thinking up some of the ideas, and, you know, be part of that process.
Well,
of planning it and implementing it.
And isn't it critical, and you kind of alluded to it there just a minute ago, I mean, you and I can't be the only ones that are identifying where the change needs to happen. We got to have help with that. This isn't going to work if I'm the only guy who comes up with where we need to go and makes the recommendations. This got to come from all directions, doesn't it?
Well, it does. In fact, I think some of the healthiest organizations are when people are going in to their leadership and say, "Hey, look what's happening with our customer service. We ought to be doing something about that."
Right.
I was working in a hospital once, and some of the major changes happened because people on the floor were saying, "Look at these statistics. And, you know, this is scary. We need to be doing something." And they weren't blaming management. They're saying, "We need to do something, and here's some ideas."
How did management take it?
They took it very well, because what management had done a couple years before that is they started getting information out so that people knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm. They knew that if they came with an idea, that it would be received and not rejected.
Yeah. Now, probably not at first. People probably were skeptical, but it was in those little things. Once again, it's that paying attention to those tiny things, that if you blow off that first person, man, there's hundreds of people hear about that.
That's right.
You know, so you really, you know, it doesn't mean you have to accept everything, but it means you have to treat all those ideas coming in with respect.
Right. Rick, give us your website one more time.
Sure thing. BeyondResistance.com.
Can we find your books there?
Yes, you can.
I hope you'll go there, folks. BeyondResistance.com. I hope you go there today and use that site for 2005. Thanks, Rick. See you next time.
Okay. It's great, Jim.
Rick
Thanks.
Maurer, ladies and gentlemen. Gotta go. I'm Jim Blassingame. This program is for you. I'll be back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.